Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cretton and I'm here with Jeff Patino.
How are you?
And Jeff's busily typing away there on the computer, all sorts of interesting stuff, and somehow he manages to keep track of everything.
I'm really not sure how it happens, really. It's just kind of, I think, largely luck.
Yeah, I just want to thank you on air for everything you do, because you make us look good most of the time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that most of the time.
Anyway, Jeff and I are with the Binary Research Institute, and we are looking at this whole idea that history moves in a vast cycle, or really consciousness moves in a vast cycle over long periods of time. And we look at this from every possible angle. And today we have a guest who has been with the legendary Rhine Research Center for quite some time. And this is one of the oldest research centers that has been studying extrasensory perception. And I think it's something like over 70 years. Anyway, our guest today is Kayla Ambrose, and she's the author of 9 Life-Altering Lessons, Secrets of the Mystery Schools Unveiled. So we're going to be talking about what those lessons are, and particularly about the mystery schools themselves. So are you on the line, Kayla?
Hi, Walter. Yes, I'm here.
Terrific, terrific. I'm glad you could be on with us today. And I guess, let's just start off with the old standard. How did you get interested in this particular work? Tell us a little bit about your background.
How did a nice girl like me get into a pickle like this? Is that what you're asking?
Precisely.
Well, I guess the easiest way to answer it is that I was born into it. Came back this lifetime understanding and remembering things from a very young age, and used to try to teach kids in the library. I was very young and would remember things about ancient mythologies and understand and read about them and want to read all the books before I was even old enough to really be reading those books, really. I would still gravitate to them and would have at a carport. I was born in Louisiana, and we have carports down there instead of garages, and I'd pull out the big chalkboard and be teaching the children all about ancient
really?
Cultures and mythologies. And my parents realized soon afterwards that I had something that runs in our family. Every couple of generations, one of us pop out with red hair and psychic abilities, and they saw that early on with it happening with me. And I was very fortunate because the family was used to that and didn't discourage it.
Well,
they didn't
nice
particularly
to have,
encourage it either.
Nice to have supportive parents, because sometimes that goes the other way. You know, they try to
yeah.
break you.
Absolutely. I also think at the time I was raised Catholic, and that actually was helpful to me in many ways, because there is an understanding in that religion of guardian angels, having a guardian angel watch over you. So when I saw a spirit guide or someone else around me that was with me for a long period of time, it was comforting as a child. I thought of that person or that spirit guide as a guardian angel that would be around me and just kind of watch over me. And so in many ways, that explained some things to me. And other people that would come and talk to me or have messages, I'd understand as saints and I was able to understand it in my own way as a child through sort of the teachings there. So while I'm not a practicing Catholic anymore, I think the religion did serve a purpose for me in that way growing up. My mother often described me, though, as she said, I'd be in the playpen and I would have such a serious look on my face and a knowing look that she felt she should get in there and just let me get up and run the show from the age of about 2. And I've kind of been teaching ever since, and that's pretty much how it started for me.
Well, good. And I saw that you said you're now teaching about the ancient mystery schools, and that's something we definitely want to get into. Also, we only have 30 seconds here, but the Rhine Research Center, that's been around 70 years or something like that?
Yes, over 70 years. I think it started in 1937, so I think we're going on 71 years now.
Excellent.
Or more than that, actually, 37. That's bad math on my part, but yeah, we're getting there.
Okay, well, we'll tell a little bit more about that. You're listening to Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Cosmic Influence. Kayla, tell us a little bit about the Rhine Research Center. I mean, I know it's got a really long history.
But weren't they the guys that used the cards, like the stars and the symbols? So these original ESP tests you hear about, they invented that, didn't they?
Yes, they're called the Zener cards, and that's what they are, the wavy line and the circle and the little symbols, and there's five of them with the cards, and that's how in the early days they did the ESP testing. And for younger generations, I remind them, if they watch Ghostbusters, you'll see in the beginning there where Bill Murray is giving a test like that, and I think he's trying to win the girl over, so he shocks the guy the whole time. And they didn't do electric shocks back at the Rhine, but that was those are the cards they're using, though, those cards that were used for that test. And we
Bill
actually
Murray
have a museum at the Rhine that shows all the early testing things that were used. We had random number generators with old machines and things that tumbled dice and cards and everything like that to test for ESP and other psychic abilities.
Right. And I understand the results. The mainstream press really doesn't give ESP much credence. But whenever I look at these studies, they're always way beyond statistical averages. And why is that? Why is it so tend to be so degraded in mainstream society, and yet the figures are good?
That's an excellent question. I think the problem is when you're dealing with soft sciences, which means that you can't prove something exactly the same each time as you can in different type of sciences, it always leaves the door open a little more for interpretation. For example, if I decide to make some kind of chemical compound that's going to create something else, and I put this much of one ingredient and this much of another, scientifically, that should work out to be the same thing each time. When you're dealing with people, though, and consciousness and psychic ability, it alters. It's not the same results each time, and it was even proved in the scientific research. The psychic itself, the person is emotional. They can be tired. They can be not feeling well. They can become bored with the game even after testing. It doesn't have the same challenge. I know when I've done some of those things, it's not that interesting to keep guessing wavy line. It's more interesting to read someone's thoughts or what's going on with them in a different way. So because it's a softer science in that way, you don't get the same repeatable result over and over. And so I think that's why on the scientific realms and in some counterparts there in media, because it's not repeatable each time, it's hard for some people to label it or go ahead and to explain.
Right. Well,
I think today in mainstream people, if you look at what's on TV and in movies, and the very fact that we can say ESP, which is just initials and not even a word, and most everyone know what we're referring to me that says we've come a long way in understanding and accepting this type of ability.
You know, too, and I think as the traditional church gives way to a broader, deeper spirituality, then there won't be any sort of institutional or less of an institutional threat there. And we'll be a little bit more open to it. Also, as we open the door of science farther into the quantum realm and begin to understand that, you know, things on that level are irrational or to some degree, it tends to be a model for how psychic phenomena works. But that's another show.
I agree, though. That's really what attracted me to the Rhine and wanting to be a help there, and how I ended up becoming executive director now, is I have a real passion for science and for spirituality. And I believe to get to the deeper answers, we have to bring the two together and let them open up and have more dialogue, because that's the mystics know part of the answers, and I think science can help us with the other part, especially with quantum physics and everything we're seeing in that angle, in that direction now. It's coming together. And I think we did have that in the ancient past in mystery schools. There was a combination of science and spirituality together, and they did work more and more. But as history has shown over time, that degraded in different ways. And then, of course, at one time, you know, it wasn't good for anyone to be into science. The church would punish them, and we seem to go back and forth, and we're trying to achieve that balance, which I think we're getting closer to now again.
I even see a little of that in a microcosmic form. I guess the Rhine was once on the Duke University campus, and you moved off, and now maybe you'll be back on someday. I'm making a little bit of a joke, but Princeton went through the same thing in their PAIRS lab there, that they operated that psychical research lab for so long, and I think they just they've separated now.
But yes, the PAIR lab is closed down, and though I do think they'll be back in some way, probably under their own steam. with something like that to come in the future. And things evolve and grow, and the Rhine decided to evolve and grow in that way. And, you know, I don't think it's too far-fetched in the future to see the Rhine itself possibly having a university of some type to teach parapsychology and to encourage the study.
Well, I think that would be a very cool thing.
Me too.
That's part of what I hope to help do there and to create, because I think people are ready for it and wanting it. And we get hundreds of phone calls every week with people having experiences or wanting to know more or learn more, or their children are having abilities. And I think it's happening more and more where people feel comfortable talking about it.
Yeah. Kayla, a couple minutes ago, you just briefly touched on mystery schools. And I know in your book you mentioned that mystery schools have been around for a long time. I mean, in fact, since ancient times. Could you start out, just talk to us a little bit for our listeners about what exactly a mystery school is, and then can we talk a little bit about the history of them?
Absolutely. Mystery schools have been around since before really pre-recorded time. There's stories of them from the civilizations of Lemuria and Atlantis, and the ones that we probably identify with the most now because we can read more about them in history were the ones that were in Egypt and in Greece. They've existed since that time, and the purpose of a mystery school is to share what's called esoteric wisdom and also to share light or enlightenment on Earth. To answer the question, what is a mystery school, is really trying to explain what's the nature of humanity, because it's so entwined together. The purpose of the schools are really to serve as a form of service to humanity, both on the earth planes and in the other realms, in the spiritual realms as well. And it's basically to teach what are called universal truths, meaning that no matter where you learn them from, whether it's a mystery school, a culture in ancient times, Eastern mythologies, Western esoteric traditions, whichever one you're drawn to, there's certain universal truths that everyone connects with and is on a soul level. One of these were written over the Greek temples. It was an axiom called "Man, know thyself." And that's really what it's about. It's the inner journey. It's the study of the soul and figuring out those questions that we all want to answer, which are, who am I and why am I here? And when you discover those two things on a deep esoteric level and inner level, it kind of sets everything else to light for you of what to do with this lifetime, what you're here, what you've done in previous lifetimes, and what you're working towards. And the reason why I wrote the book to bring it back is I think we move in cycles and ages, and we're moving into a different age now of Aquarius, and it's returning back to the time of the mystery schools, to the grandeur that they were before. I think every person that's here right now in this time, it's a very special time to be alive, and each person has a very important part to play on the earth right now. And I was guided to bring this back. I've been studied with three different master teachers with mystery schools during this lifetime, and then I've been teaching myself now for about 12 years, I think it is, somewhere around there. And it's why I've been doing this quietly and privately, as the mystery school is. I've been guided to it this time to write the book and to let more information know about this, not just about the school I have in North Carolina, but about mystery schools all over and the teachers that exist all around the world.
You know, the mystery school phenomena, by its very nature, it's hard to find a lot of good modern data on them, because, you know, so much of it was passed down orally, the teachings. But one of the mystery schools of old, the Roman Greco-Mithraean culture, is one that we talked about in our book, Lost Star of Myth and Time. We do have some pretty good preservation of the physical structure and some of their sculptures, and because they were actually building their temples underground, and when the Catholic Church took over sort of the Roman civilization there, they used them as trash dumps and just filled them up with all this stuff, and over a few thousand years it preserved them. And so now we've found these beautiful Pteroctonies. And you talk about, you know, the changing ages. They always had the centerpiece of the zodiac, and it would, and the bull slaying scene, and they were trying to signal in some way the, we think sort of the slaying of the age of Taurus brings on some higher period of consciousness. And that's probably both outward and an inward metaphor.
Absolutely. But, and I agree with that. And one of the problems is, yes, a lot of it was, shared orally with the students. And even with my book, I write about the neophyte journey. What does it mean to be a neophyte in the temple? And when you move from that level into the initiate, into the adept, most of it is done experiential and orally. And then the rest of it, it's been hard to keep up with because, unfortunately, as cultures and politics and religions change, people have a tendency to want to burn temples and destroy documents and burn down places like the Library of Alexandria and all those places that were such a wealth of information. And that's one thing we try to do at the school is we have a huge library and we continue to build on it and want to recreate that and hopefully one day build that, a big library similar to that where scholars and philosophers and people around the world could come and share and teach this information that they all have in different parts again. The theme really of the school is many paths, one destination, meaning that each person has a story, has wisdom to share, and we all take different paths to get there, but we're all looking for the same destination, which is to know ourselves on a deeper level inside and then also to understand with the universe and the greater mysteries beyond. And yes, with the Mithraism, that's a wonderful one to study because it is more recent, and I agree with what you're saying with the slaying of the bull and moving into the age and, from one to the other. And it's quite fascinating to follow that all and to see how the cultures were to do that. And then there was some talk that there were certain zodiac signs actually assigned to each mystery school according to where they were as well, and the bull could have been significant for them in other ways.
Oh, that's a good point. You know, another key piece of the iconography there is these two boys holding torches on each side of the zodiac, of course, representing the great cycle itself. And the boy on the one side, it's usually on the right side when we're looking at it, is Cautopates, and he's holding his torch pointing down, indicating that and when we're in the descending age, light is going out. And the other one, Cautes, so it's Cautes and Cautopates. Cautes is holding his torch up, and he's on the ascending age when the light's coming in. And so they have this beautiful iconography that helped to preserve some of the teachings, even though we find very little writing attached to it.
And that's such a beautiful way to explain the cycles that we move in of time as well. So many people think of time as linear and going in a line, when really it's cyclical and we repeat. And just like with ages of darkness and ages of light, it's cyclical where we go in and out of those and return. And if people could see time that way, that we repeat and move rather than a long line, I think it would explain a lot more of our history and what we've gone through.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. We're all about that, and it's so tied to nature. You know, the spinning earth gives us a cycle of night and day. The earth moving around the sun gives us a cycle of the seasons. So if the whole solar system is moving through space, you know, why not an even greater cycle? And that's
absolutely. I've heard too with Mithras, and of course I love the Mithras story because that's really fun when you start to look at, you know, when his birthday was supposedly, and tie that in with other religions as well.
Right.
But also there are stories too that he was equated with the constellation above Taurus. So there could have been something that there too with his stories, which would be an interesting project to really research and to go in depth to.
Right, you're referring to Perseus, of course.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let's touch on that when we get back. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. I don't know enough about Perseus to comment intelligently, but we do know that ancient cultures certainly told time, the time of the ages, through the different constellations of the zodiac. And your book, it's called 9 Life-Altering Lessons, Secrets of the Mystery Schools Unveiled. I'd like to get into that if we could, Kayla, and tell us what those lessons are.
Sure, that's my favorite topic. No problem there.
Okay, well, what's lesson number one?
Well, lesson number one, and the book goes sequentially, I guess I should say, is to take the reader on a ride, starting from the beginning, starts with an introduction of what is a mystery school, what is it like to be a student, and then takes you through 9 life-altering lessons. Even if you're not interested in being a student, if you take any of those, they would touch you and begin to work with you. lesson one is that we live in a magical universe. And basically what that is saying is that everything here has importance. Everything has an ability to be affected. And how it is affected is with our thoughts and with what we think, what we do, our actions, our deeds. And that also to understand that the universe does operate by a higher power and a higher set of universal laws. And when we begin to understand this, we begin to see life, the experiences, rather of why this is done to me. Instead of looking at it that way, we look at it as experiences, or in the school sometimes they'll call them lessons, and why we continue to have these experiences or lessons until we understand them and grow through them and change them. And when we begin to understand that way, we understand a little differently that it's not about things just happening to us or the fate, but that we do have the free will to expand and grow and change from there and to affect the outcome in some way. And I think that's important for people to understand, and it develops in from there, from a magical universe drilling down deeper each time. And in esoteric teachings, we call it peeling back the onion. We give a broad concept. We live in a magical universe. Okay, that sounds great. Well, what does that really mean?
Yeah,
well, then we start to peel back.
Just that point is so important because so many people, you know, are sort of fearful of life. It's almost what's drilled into us if we turn on the news. Oh, watch out for this or watch out for that. Versus if you can see it as, hey, this is a trip we're on, and it is a magical experience. Boy, it's just that one thought changes our level of happiness.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay, absolutely. Drill down for us.
Well, this is the first lesson, that we live in a magical universe, basically means that the possibilities of what we can create are infinite. When we begin to understand that it's not just what our parents told us, or schools, or someone that we looked up to, there's not just A or B. The possibilities are infinite. When that begins to open your eyes, the possibilities really become infinite at that point. And, of course, I have students question me there because they've seen things like certain movies or read certain books that just say, well, if you think this, your universe will change immediately, or you can think this into being. And I have students that come to me and say, I thought about this over and over and it didn't happen. Why is that? And when we drill down, we go into where are your thoughts really, and where are you operating out of? Are you operating out of fear and doubt? Are you operating out of your higher self and belief in things? Because you can say something that you want over and over and over, but if your fear is something else, or if you believe that you can't have that, you won't attract that into your life. And that's probably the first one that we really try to explain.
So basically there's a caveat then. You can have anything you want if you have the power to bring it about.
If you do the work, exactly, yeah. And have the wisdom to know how to, I call it the key to open the doors. And
thank God for that, by the way, because otherwise all chaos could be breaking loose.
Exactly. And I start my book, the first line I think I say is, don't believe a word I say. And I say that to every student. I'm not trying to be a guru. I'm not saying listen to me, I know all, see all. I say, you don't have to believe a word I say. I'm just putting this out there, and if it seems reasonable to you and you want to think about it and go try it, then go see for yourself. Because I don't teach people how to listen to others. I teach people how to look within themselves and discover the secrets that are hidden within their soul, which wants to come out to them, which is hidden within each of us. There's ancient Greek mythology legends about this, about where to hide the secrets from man, in the stars, under the oceans. No, it's hidden within each of us. And when we can find the keys and the tools to unlock it, the wisdom comes from within. And I'm just a mirror holding up and showing you those parts of yourself, helping you work through those so that you can find the key within and unlock it.
I think I saw one of the quotes or something. Somebody was talking about your book, and she said, her aim is to help you remember what you already know at a soul level.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And I agree with you with what you said a minute ago, that if we could just think of anything, the chaos that would result. And I talk about that in the book. I said, let's talk about the thoughts you've had this past week. How many thoughts have you had about yourself and your family and coworkers and even strangers? Or when you're watching a sporting event and you're chanting that you wish the other team would be crushed, do you really want that to happen? When you're really yelling at someone in a car, do you want that to happen? Well, maybe sometimes you do. But most times you really don't. You're just frustrated. So what if all your thoughts did become reality? it would be a mess. So we have a fail-safe, as you say, put into place until we really can work on ourselves and activate that at a larger level.
A matter of fact, that was done in the movie Bruce Almighty.
Where, there you go.
who was it became God?
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, right. And so he just starts answering all the prayers, saying yes. And, of course, when, you know, 2 million people are winning the lotto that week, it sort of...
sort of defeats the purpose.
It does, yeah. Absolutely. You only get a dollar each or something.
Well, you know, it reminds me of a friend of mine back when the Angels here in Southern California were in the World Series, and they had the rally monkey was this monkey that they'd put up on the screen, and it just exploded, and people were buying these little stuffed monkeys. I had a friend who we were watching it at home, and he was convinced that if he sat in a certain position with his rally monkey facing the TV screen whenever the Angels were up to bat, that somehow would influence the their batting ability.
Well, you know, totems have been around like that since the dawn of time, where people have used a totem in one form or another. And if you have energy and belief behind it, it can become a useful tool. That, in a sense, is what even rosaries were made for, is a totem to remember and to focus thought on. So,
good point.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Perhaps the monkey did.
Yeah, it helps direct the attention and energy in a certain way. And that's important. We need to take a short break here, but just remind people what your website is. Kayla, can you give it to us?
Sure. The easiest one is 9lessons.com. That'll take you about the book and about the school, which is the Temple of Stella Maris, which is also templeofstellamaris.org. Or another easy one is my name, which is just kaylaambrose.com. And Kayla's K-A-L-A.
Perfect. And you're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. Kayla, I know you mentioned earlier you're also a psychic and an empath. How do you incorporate that into your work? And is that good or bad?
Well,
it's good, Jeff.
I decided a long time ago that I didn't want to just do psychic readings anymore. The reason being is I was good at them. And people would come back every week wanting more. And they really, I found that they really wanted me to tell them something would change, even though they weren't being a facilitator of change. They would come and say, you know, is my husband being faithful? And they most times already knew the answer. And they'd come back a week or 2 weeks later, well, is he going to be faithful now? And I found that very sad. And I didn't feel I was really helping people with that information. So it goes back to that old parable, give a man a fish and he eats for a day, or teach a man to fish and he eats for a lifetime. So I decided to use those abilities I had to begin to teach people instead and start the school. My belief is that if people go through lessons and learn these things, one of the core teachings of a neophyte is to understand your emotions and gain control over your emotions. This doesn't mean that you're not an emotional person. It just means that you're in control of them. So you have the emotion. It flows through you, much like water flows through a colander. You're aware of the emotion, but your higher self is able to stand out and look at it and say, I understand I'm having this emotion. This is why I'm feeling this way. This is what caused it. This is my decision, how upset I get about it, or how angry I might become, or whatever that I might do. And once you understand that, you're able then to look at it differently and react differently. So in my work, I decided to teach that way as well. And where it really comes in helpful is when I do have a new student coming in, I feel their emotions, I feel what's going on with them, and I'm able to read what's going on with them. Even when they don't, perchance, maybe want to open up right away, I'm able to be much more successful and get into the depth of things with them quickly, knowing what's really bothering them and helping them see it. Sometimes it's subconscious or a delusional thing they haven't even looked at, and I seem to have this ability to get right in there and just pick it out right from deep within and pull it out and say, let's look at this little piece right here and what's going on. And I think that's the best way I've been able to help people and work with it.
You know, in reading about your background, Kayla, I noticed you've lived all over the place.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, you know, that probably gives you a better perspective on people also. Where you were in Hawaii and Alaska and...
few places, yeah. I think it did. I was born in Louisiana, which is a great place to be born with these abilities, because it's you know, very common down there. People, everyone has a ghost story. There's certainly, if you've been to New Orleans in that area, there's lots of talk about all types of things like this, and people are very open to it. I had my first deck of tarot cards, I think, when I was about 12 years old, and it's just a very comfortable place to do. But then having moved around the country and lived in different places like Alaska and Hawaii and California and Washington and Florida and Colorado, and I could keep naming, I met so many different people and people of different faiths and spiritualities and was able to study with some of them, and that really broadened my horizons. Meeting a kahuna, studying kahuna teachings, being exposed
to some of that. What did you think about some of the Hawaiian mythology there? I've looked at that a little bit, but it seemed to be so deep in symbolism, I couldn't understand a lot of the stories.
It's so beautiful. It's, you know, when you... People, I talk to people about Hawaii and say, you have to go. And they'll tell me, oh, I've been to the Caribbean, or I've been here, or I've been there. And I explain to them, it has an energy there like none other. And their spirituality is directly connected to the earth there. And, you know, when you see volcanic things spewing and it's into the ocean and the island's being created right there in front of your eyes, it's a living, breathing organism, it explains so much of their spirituality and where it comes from, and that whole understanding they have of the cycle of birth and rebirth and life and death. And it's an energetic feeling there that I don't think is replicated anywhere on the earth, at least not anywhere that I've been to date. And it's completely different than what you feel in the Caribbean or other places like that. And I highly recommend for everyone to put that on their list of something to do in their lifetime, to go there at least once, because I just can't imagine anyone ever being disappointed from going there and feeling the energy.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Yeah, I usually spend a month or two each year in Maui, and was reading about, I guess, the god Pele is the one they use associate with volcanic activity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought a book on Hawaiian myths, and I'm still trying to sort of mentally associate them to, you know, some of the other myths and life teachings. But
so many stories about Pele, and I'm sure if you've been up there to the crater, you'll see all the people that have mailed back things that they took from her, took rocks or a piece of it, and there's a whole myth that they have bad luck and they're not supposed to take, and they return it back. Even the shoes, they mail back their shoes where they walked on the crater.
Oh.
And the stories that happened to them because of it, and there's a whole museum up there built with just letters and artifacts that people send back from doing it.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard about that.
I think this the general idea of you're not supposed to take anything or desecrate the land in any way has really has a practical benefit, and I wish more people would just treat the land that way today, you know, from an environmental standpoint.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it really makes one see Earth more as a mother and revere it a little bit.
Well, strip mining is such an aesthetic thing to do. Yeah.
That was
kidding.
That was one of the first really industrial activities too that started to muck up the earth.
Well, it's that battle we've been facing. You see that in Stonehenge where they're having to block it off down because people were chipping away at the rocks. And yet you don't see that in indigenous cultures. They understand that they don't own anything, but yet that they own everything, that they belong to the earth and everything on earth belongs to them. And it's much more of a deeper understanding of that, of it's there and take what you need and don't take more than you need. And it's such a beautiful way to live. And we seem to still be struggling with this lesson, many other of us in cultures, that it's a need of a fear of lack and mine, and I need to take this now and
so which one of the 9 life-altering lessons does that fit into?
That would definitely be with to do with abundance and understanding that the world is so abundant and there's more than we could ever need. And if you understand that thought, that where you live and where your thoughts are, I'd say with the lesson in the one is that we are limitless and ageless, and all that exists is now. And if you understand that, there's no worry about the future or the past, because all that exists is right now. It's this moment I'm spending right here with you, Walter and Jeff, and where we're sharing energy and talking with each other. This is really what's real and what exists. And the rest,
so true.
goes on. And we're limitless, and what this universe wants to give us is full of abundance and wants to offer. And we only limit the universe by our thoughts and believing in lack and fearing that we won't have enough.
Unfortunately, our broadcaster is not limitless in time, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Certainly, the opportunities of life are limitless, and that's a good way to look at it. But time is something that people struggle with nowadays. You know, we fill our lives with so much stuff that many people just feel they don't have enough time to live properly. And that's really probably a matter of priorities than anything else. But I'm curious about your thoughts on this mythology about 2012 or some impending change. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I do love talking about time, and my mother was given my name in a dream, and they were very specific. She kept trying to put a Y in my name, and they were telling her no. She would have a dream recurring when she was pregnant with me, and they kept telling her K-A-L-A, which she had never heard of the name growing up in Louisiana. Later found out it was Sanskrit, and the name means time.
Right.
And my middle name is Renee, which means reborn, so basically I was named Time Reborn. And so I really love to teach about time and what we can do with it. And I do think time is speeding up right now, and many people are talking about this, how karma seems to be coming quicker, changes are coming quickly, the years are speeding by. And I believe scientists are seeing this as well, and quantum physics are starting to see as the universe is expanding, it seems, as things are going quicker.
Well, they do recognize that galaxies seem to be moving faster as they move apart from each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
And with that thought that time is speeding up, I don't think it's anything to be alarmed about. We go through these cycles, and this happens as we prepare for a rebirth. And the Hindus teach it as different ages that we're in, and we've been in the age of Kali Yuga, and we're moving into a new cycle. There are so many people talking about this, and we, at times, sometimes we'll look at one culture above another to see the importance there, or to look for something to explain it to us so that we have more of a comfort zone. And right now, everyone seems to have attached to the Mayan calendar of 2012. Now, the 2012 thing I've always found fascinating, because many scholars, of course, have found that our Roman calendar that we have currently isn't even the right time, that the monks were off probably, they think, about 4 years. I don't remember if it's before or after. So right now it's 2008, but if we're 4 years off one way, it is 2012. If we're the other way, it's 2004. so which is the correct 2012? Is it the one 4 years from now? Is it right now? Or was it 4 years before? That's another thing we have to consider. We attach so much time to a number or time.
Yeah, I think they put Christ's birth more like 4 or 7 BC, something like that. But the Mayan time is tied to lunar motions of Venus. So I think it's pretty accurate.
Well, given that, if we are, you know, and we're looking at their calendar, and 2012 is accurate with that, I think it's really was to talk about an age that we're moving into in a cycle, and we are entering a new cycle. I don't think specifically, like some people think, December 21st on 2012 will be a great something. I could be wrong. I'm not claiming to know all of that. But I really think it's more about the end of an age into a new cycle, and that's where they left it, as to what's to come. And many mystics, scholars, historians alike have talked about this new age that we're coming into, and it being a golden age. And with that, time will be not perceived and not felt the way it was anymore. And in January 2013, I don't think we're going to see a huge difference. I think it's something that happens over a long, long period of time, and we'll begin to see it. And I think we have been for the past 15 years or so experiencing it, and that's why people are feeling the changes in time that we have right now.
I think that's very consistent with the Vedic teaching, that we're moving out of the darker ages into the lighter ages, but it does take a long time.
Absolutely.
But perhaps, you know, we're nearing the spring of that transition, where things really start to flower, and, you know, at a little faster rate.
And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people discount. I mean, we're all only here on this earth for between 70 and 100 years. towards the upper end of the scale, and we expect things to happen on that scale, but the universe doesn't work on that time scale.
A lot bigger scale.
So when people talk about change, no one ever considers that change might take a lot longer than a single or several lifetimes.
I couldn't agree more. It's an excellent point. And we sometimes get so centered into me, and what's it going to mean to me, and what's it going to happen, rather than looking at it with the big picture. And that is really what happens. And with any change, you know, whether you're cleaning out a closet or uprooting your garden or preparing it for spring, it's going to get messy. There's going to be some things that we perceive or call negative. And I think we're seeing some of those, and we'll probably continue to see some through 2012 that we'll call unpleasant experiences. But with anything, whether you're pruning a tree, working the garden, uprooting, or like I said, cleaning out a closet, it has to get messier before you can create and grow and evolve further. So we tend to be so caught up in those experiences and labeling them, where if we could look at the bigger picture and see that they're growth experiences, and most of us still on this earth plane have chosen to learn on the earth plane, which a lot of times is through negative experiences. And for some reason, we're still caught up in that part of our mentality that those seem to be the ones we remember the most and the ones that affect us the most and the ones that we grow from the most. If we could change our thoughts and think in a more positive direction all the time, we wouldn't have to have so many negative experiences. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah, well, like you say, we're barely out of the dark ages, moving towards the light, and it just takes a while. You know, during the day when you're just barely out of dawn, shadows are very long. So, you know, things cast big shadows. You're able to see the problems easier than the opportunities.
Very true.
Yeah. Well, we're getting near the end of the show, Kayla, but I sure wanted to thank you for all your work you've done to, you know, tell us about the mystery schools and the lessons therein. And I'd like to remind everybody that about your book. It's available on Amazon or any major bookstores, I assume?
Yes, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, local bookstores in many areas of the country. If it's not there already, just ask them. They'll be happy to order it for you. And, of course, directly through the publisher, which is Reality Press, at reality-entertainment.com.
Okay, and once again, the name of that book is 9 Life-Altering Lessons, Secrets of the Mystery Schools Unveiled. So thanks again, Kayla, for being on, and I hope to talk with you more in the future.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All the best.
You're listening to Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening. If you'd like more information on the Binary Research Institute and the topics we discuss on this show, visit us at our website, www.binaryresearchinstitute.org. And if you'd like more information on Walter's book, Lost Star of Myth and Time,
it's really Walter and Jeff's book, as Jeff did so much research, helped write the thing. Take some credit, Jeff.
Thank you. I will. So if you'd like any more information on Walter and my book, Lost Star of Myth and Time, visit the website for the book, which is www.loststarbook.com.
And one final thing, we hope to see everybody at the Conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge this year. We have a couple new speakers, William Sullivan, Peter Kingsley. It's going to be a fantastic event. We hope to see you.
So until our next episode,
bring on the higher ages.